some Council of Provinces and then Committee on Economic Development. Who would like to start? Honourable members, let me from the outset say that the DG was not supposed to be with us. He has apologized, but not the DG, sorry, the Deputy Minister. Deputy Minister, thank you for availing yourself and for the time. And Deputy Minister, I believe us at about half past three and quarter to four. So I think we will give Deputy Minister that opportunity to leave us at that time. That's in order with you, members?
Aye.
Good. No one has got an objection. You see, Deputy Minister, in this committee, we work on continuity and basis.
Thank you.
Welcome everybody, members and the staff, because you know we haven't seen each other for some time. We only see each other on Monday and on Sunday. That was just in the passing because the conference is so excited, and it's a pity that we couldn't stay for the whole duration, Director General, but we had some other words, but some of our other colleagues stayed behind, so they'll give us a full report. And according to them, they wish this was a week-long conference that we have had here because it was very, very insightful and exciting. But we'll start the introduction without further delay. And you know, I always say that we introduce ourselves because we don't want to read tomorrow that reliable or informed source has said that we want to put the name by the release or by the piece of article that we read in the newspaper. My name is Freddy Adams. I'm the chairperson of the Committee of Economic Development. It comprises Economic Development, Mineral Resources, and Energy in the National Council of Provinces, and I'm a permanent delegate from the Western Cape. I'll go down to my left with the introductions and introduce yourself, each province, leave the ID number and the status when you're married, divorced, or single. You can leave that for another day.
My name is Dave Evans, and I'm from Carlton Province. Today, I'm Elder Tan Ling from the Eastern Cape.
Good day, my name is Mashiko Bodefile from the Popo Province.
Richard Levine, Economic Development.
Robert Shaw, Economic Development.
Mandilake Mantlana Economic Development.
Thank you,
on a good trip with you. I just walked through some interpretation with my teachers to walk us through the document. Basically, I mean, the relationship between economy and the strategy plan and the budget is that this government has identified job creation as a fundamental program of the government within the current financial year. Among other things, over the next 5 years, in any event. So, what strategic plan does is basically outline how we're going to do our work to achieve those broader objectives. And that's what really what it entails. And then your budget becomes how you resource those plans. And I think DG is going to walk us through that strategy, that roadmap, and the resource underpinning that roadmap. Over to you, DG.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Member, Honourable Deputy Minister. If I could just say thank you very much for the opportunity and also to thank all the Honourable Members who were able to join us for our conference, but also to apologise because I am aware that a number of the Honourable Members had problems around the registration. I do apologise for that. But I think they were sorted out, and we will make sure that in the future they are not mistakes again. Thank you. In this presentation, what we're going to do is walk the Honourable Members through our strategic plan 2011-12 to 2015-16, and then through the budget vote of 2011-12 through to 2013-14, and then make some concluding remarks. So without any delay, moving straight into the strategic plan, we're going to outline the vision, mission and values, the mandate. We're going to talk to the new growth path, which occupies a central place in the work of economic development department going forward. We'll do some situation analysis. We'll look at the strategic outcome-oriented goals, the strategic objectives, the budgeting, the staff. We'll look at the whole area of risk management. We'll also give a broad outline of the public entities that report to the Minister of Economic Development. Moving then straight into the vision and mission, the vision of the department is to facilitate the creation of decent work through meaningful economic transformation and inclusive growth. In terms of our mission, the department aims to coordinate the contributions of government departments, state entities, and civil society on economic development, to contribute to efforts that ensure alignment between the economic policies and plans of the state and its agencies, and government's political objectives and mandates, and to promote government's goals of advancing economic development with decent work opportunities. The values that we adhere to and promote are those of the Constitution, and these include the promotion of decent work for all citizens, social partnership and dialogue, equity and development, and sustainability, both in terms of environmental as well as social and the legislative mandate, we do administer certain pieces of legislation which relate to the public entities which are under our purview, and that would, those would include the Industrial Development Corporation Act, the old Act, 1940, the Competition Act, and the International Trade Administration Act of 2002, but in that case, item 2 of Schedule 2, which deals with individual tariff applications, is still under the purview of the Minister for Trade and Industry. Moving on then to the political mandate, really it's to make the creation of decent work opportunities and sustainable livelihoods the primary focus of government economic policy, to ensure ensure that macroeconomic policy is informed by the priorities of the electoral mandate and actively promotes the creation of decent employment, economic growth, broad-based industrialization, reduced income inequality, and other developmental imperatives. So the key developmental imperatives of government are really ones which we need to ensure that economic policy is able to speak to, economic policy across the board in government. To ensure that state and industrial policy transforms the economy, to implement special sector programs embracing industrial trade and other measures backed by adequate resources, to ensure that a comprehensive package of measures is introduced to promote beneficiation programs, to engage the private financial sector to facilitate its transformation and diversification, to develop programs to promote the important role of mining and agriculture and employment, meeting basic needs and community development, to support tourism and other services, to expand up work opportunities, to develop and invest in a program to create large numbers of green jobs, focus on the green economy being very central to the work we do, to ensure that the mandates of development finance institutions are clear and truly developmental, to lead a massive public investment program for growth and employment creation, to step up the program of expanded public work linked to infrastructure and the meeting of social needs, to address quality of employment issues, to create a conducive environment for more labor-intensive production methods as well as procurement policies that support local jobs and build public-private partnerships, and to vigorously implement broad-based economic empowerment and affirmative action policies, and then to launch a much larger national youth service program. We also have a political mandate which stems from the global financial economic crisis, and that was the development of the framework agreement, which we have engaged with the committee in the past, focused on maintaining high levels of public investment in infrastructure to support private and public job preservation and creation, deploying macroeconomic policies in combination and aggressively where required to address the economic crisis, to utilize trade and industrial policy to rebuild local industrial capacity, to utilize a combination of measures on public employment, private sector initiatives, including training to avoid massive job losses that would obviously be a training layoff scheme if we had a working committee in the past about, and then scaling up social interventions to address the jobs challenge and ensure social protection. In terms of our policy mandates, the department is responsible for developing or facilitating the development of economic policy with a broad cross-cutting focus. The new growth path, its development as a major policy instrument and its implementation is an area that the department is charged with the responsibility to ensure that we have coordinated action across government in support of the new growth path. With the DTI, National Treasury and other departments for the implementation of the delivery agreement of Outcome 4 in the new outcomes-based performance monitoring and evaluation system coordinated from the presidency. And then Outcome 4 focuses on decent employment for inclusive growth. And then obviously the implementation of the strategic plan of the Economic Development Department. Moving on then to the new growth path, and the Minister has made a presentation to the committee on key elements of the new growth path. I think at the center of the new growth path is the ambitious job creation target of 5 million new jobs by 2020. And then ensuring that economic policy really focuses on the jobs challenge, and that is very much central to what we are responsible for in the area of the New Growth Park. There are a number of key organizing principles of the New Growth Park, and those would be improving labor absorption in the economy in terms of the actual absolute number of jobs created, as well as the labor intensity of economic growth more broadly. And those that would refer to the number of jobs per 1% of GDP growth or per 1 billion rand of investment. Then very much a focus on rebuilding the productive capacity of the country through strong focus on the real economy sectors and improving their performance. Then integrating a green consideration in economic growth. And that would be a focus on reducing carbon emissions as well as actively identifying new opportunities within the green economy through the development of green technology and associated rollout and the stimulus that will give to various parts of manufacturing in order to meet those demands as they arise. Then also to focus very much on the African continent and identify opportunities for South African investment and trade. Also to support logistics and industrial opportunities on the continent that can strengthen South Africa's own employment and economic development. To improve also the coherence and linkages between different sectors as well as between public institutions to ensure that we are able to maximize jobs and development opportunities. And then to promote social partnerships through dialogue between business, labor, and government in order to advance job creation across the economy. There are a number of areas which we're looking at for particular focus, and these really are the microeconomic interventions which we believe will support the overarching endeavor of job creation, and those would include lowering the cost of capital for industrial enterprises and manufacturing, improving skills development across the economy, including through the work of the development financial institutions, and then strengthening competitiveness in the economy, tackling the inherent problems of monopolies and price fixing, a big focus on small business to support their growth, as well as the growth of cooperatives in order to draw greater numbers of South Africans into entrepreneurial activities and improve job creation opportunities, focusing trade policies on the opportunities in fast-growing economies, including through rebalancing trade with stronger exports of manufactured goods, and I think most of you would recall when we've done the growth path presentation in the past, we have looked at the trade relations with China, which show quite clearly that from South Africa's side, there's a big focus on the exports of raw materials, and then what we get in our all beneficiated manufactured products. So the whole area of beneficiation and increasing opportunities for their export and rebalancing our trade with various trading partners. Big focus on rural development, which we know is also one of the major priorities of government for the current term. And that has a number of different aspects, including the location of industrial activity, support of infrastructure, and obviously looking at the bigger challenge of drawing in many of our people in rural areas who are involved in productive activities, particularly agriculture, drawing them into value chain. That's an area that we do take seriously and focus on together with our partners in agriculture and rural development and land reform and the GTI. addressing the key development goals of women empowerment, broad-based black economic empowerment, youth employment, and local economic development, and then improving the performance of the development finance institutions, which will include the cost of their services, the turnaround time, the level of capital they can mobilize for the various activities that are set out in the new growth plan. So EDD will then, in this light, with in cooperation with various government departments and agencies, focus on a number of microeconomic policy interventions, which include strengthening competition policy, procurement reform, implementation of a revised broad-based black economic empowerment framework, skills enhancements and a reform of the school system, small business development, developmental trade, improving the regulatory framework, reducing red tape, promoting a competitive exchange rate, and social dialogue. Now, if we just look very briefly at the situation we find ourselves in, our growth between 1994 and 2008 has been on a par with middle-income countries, excluding India and China, which have had exceptionally high growth rates, as we're all aware. But notwithstanding that, our unemployment rate is far higher, and our income inequality is amongst the worst in the world. To compound the problem of what many refer to as jobless growth, we had the global financial crisis in 2008-09, which wiped out a million South African jobs and returned our unemployment rate to the rate of the early 2000s. And then, as we've already indicated, the new growth path does set the target of 5 million new jobs by 2020, and that requires employment to increase by 3.4% per annum. Now, I think with these overarching developmental challenges in mind, that the President has mobilized all state institutions to align themselves with the new growth path in the State of the Nation address, opening parliament at the beginning of the year, declaring 2011 a year of job creation, the introduction of the new growth path to guide our work in achieving the goals of job creation through meaningful economic transformation, and then giving a clear indication that all government departments should align their programs with the job creation imperative, with the provincial and local spheres having been requested to do the same. And then obviously one of the key questions we would need to answer and engage with honourable members is, what is it that we as EDD do about ensuring that these issues raised by the President in the State of the Nation address are meaningfully executed by government departments across the entire system, national, provincial and local. And then that the programs of the state-owned enterprises and development finance institutions also be more strongly aligned to the job creation agenda. Now, if we look at the environment, what do we have at our disposal as EDD to, you know, embark on this huge task which is outlined here? We're in a situation where we are a newly created department from absolute scratch. Some of the new departments were established because departments split or various functions were transferred. So, for example, Department of Energy is a new department as well, but it was a split. Ours was from absolute scratch, from nothing. We started a department. We do now have over 90 staff. We're hovering around the century mark. We shouldn't be chokers like some of our cricketing heroes, but yeah, that's where we are. We're hovering around the 100 mark at the moment. So I'm pretty sure that within the next couple of months we will hit our century. We'll have over 100 staff in place. It sounds like a lot of people. In the discussion we can talk about what that actually We do have accommodation constraints. There is a commitment to ensure that EDD and DTI are aligned in the work we do in advancing the National Economic Transformation Agenda. So there is a decision that we should be located on the DTI campus. Something has to give way. Some of the agencies would need to move to facilitate that. And it is currently a constraint. We do need to have a very healthy working environment for these new staff we bring into the new institution. We have filled some of the key corporate posts, and right now we are in the process of complying with the Auditor General, submission of annual financial statements, and that does obviously require a major capacity to execute all of that. We also do have growing numbers of senior professional staff, DDG level, chief director level. We currently have been able to achieve what we've achieved through a memorandum of understanding with the Department of Trade and Industry, and that continues to govern our relationship, although it is being changed because of the changing circumstances, which requires from our side less dependence than before on the DTI for corporate support services. Then basically our funding situation, the minister approved an organogram after the establishment of the department prior to the actual budget allocation, so our approved organogram is far larger than our personal budget allows for, but we do have funding for 129 posts in this financial year, 140 posts in the next financial year, and 140 in 2013-14. Now, if we look at our strategic outcome-oriented goal, it is really the promotion of decent work through meaningful economic transformation and inclusive growth. Our goal statement is to provide participatory, coherent, and coordinated economic policy, planning, and dialogue for the benefit of all South Africans. Our key indicators would be the number of jobs created, GDP growth, employment ratio or absorption rate, distribution of earned income, and then households in poverty. And I think obviously the honorable members would be sensitive to the fact that on our own, as a new department with in the region of 100 staff, we clearly cannot achieve that. And we do rely on departments at all levels of the system, at all spheres of government, to support the realization of what underlies these key indicators. And those are things which we have discussed with the committee before, and I'm sure we'll discuss that again today. Moving into the programs, like in all departments, Program 1 focuses on administration. This is really the budget program. That's why it's depicted in this way, because if it was an organogram, the minister or the ministry would be at the top of the apex. This is really the items that fall within the budget program. The ministry, the Office of the Director General, the Office of the CFO, and corporate services. The strategic objectives are to provide strategic support and administrative services to the minister and deputy minister. This involves support for engagement at cabinet level, parliament level, intergovernmental interactions at all spheres of government, as well as with public entities, engagements with international agencies, foreign economic representatives, stakeholders including social partners, communities, the media, and the public. And then there are also support and strategic services on the administrative side provided to the Director General, which is support on legislation, policies, policy alignment, coordination, ensuring that we are complying with planning and reporting requirements. As we move into this financial year, from the previous financial year, there are new requirements from the Oxford Auditor General and from the National Treasury, I think to some extent there's what we're finding, especially as the new department having to navigate all of this with limited capacity, is that those two hands, the left and the right, are not talking 100% to each other, and that makes it even more challenging and onerous for us to comply with all the new reporting requirements. This year you'll see all the departments will be providing annual reports in a new kind of format, which is very much standardized, and between those offices there are unfortunately sort of differences in understanding of the precision of those requirements. Supporting the department's participation in the custom system, supporting the ministry and branches on operational and administrative matters, ensuring that we have efficient and effective document flow throughout the organization, providing internal audits and risk management services. And then the broader operational administrative support to the department, legal services, human resource management, information technology services, financial management and related services, communication and events management services. Now obviously these support services as a new department are services that we are compelled to put in place. And that in itself is a massive job, and the question and the discussion we had with the committee before is the balance between the creation of that professional operational capacity to implement the programs and projects that will support the economic goals that we're chasing as a department, and then having the back office that can support that but can also comply with the requirements of the National Treasury, the Auditor General's Office, as well as the Department of Public Service Administration. So those are massive compliance requirements which we have to fulfill as a new department as well. So if we look at the sort of what this means in terms of administration at the level of budget and personnel, in 2012, for this program, 55 million rising to 60, and then 63 through the MTEF. And then we have the projected personnel numbers, where we looked at the maximum targeted numbers. Now, we've done this because, as I've indicated, the approved organogram is not fully funded. And I think over time, if we prove our worth, I'm assuming that we will then get increases to our baseline, which will enable us to fund fully the organogram that has been approved. But what we're trying to do with these projected personnel numbers is to ensure that we have a proper balance between our core line function staff and our support staff. Because if we're a department and I'm coming to the committee and telling the honourable members we can afford 129 posts, I don't think the members would be impressed if I said, well, we're going to have 90 people in corporate services. So that's why we're looking at how to try and achieve the balance while at the same time complying with the requirements of the Auditor General, CPSA, and National Treasury. Program 2, Economic Policy Development. The sub-programs, growth path and the creation of decent work, economic policy, broad-based black economic empowerment, the second economy, and the establishment of the Economic Development Institute and research. The strategic objectives being to coordinate the implementation of the growth path through developing policy instruments in the form of papers, policy proposals, and through dialogue of policy platforms, consultation with other departments, municipalities, public enterprises, state-owned enterprises, the development of the policies and sector strategies through identifying the relevant and appropriate macro and micro economic policy options, outlining and analyzing future paths of the economy, and then quantitative assessment and analysis of the likely impact of policy options. promoting broad-based black economic empowerment, which really is to ensure the meaningful participation by the majority of the people in economic activity, transforming and mainstreaming the second economy through appropriate policies to transform second economy activities and draw second economy productive activity into broader value chains, establish an economic development institute to provide a platform for economic researchers and practitioners to provide analysis of data which is collected by state and other institutions. So the budget allocations here rising from 23 million to 30 million, and then the staff numbers, we're setting minimum targets here for the same reasons I've explained. That's why we're trying to put a cap on the back office and trying to see how much we can expand the front office in order to really make an effective and meaningful contribution to economic transformation. Economic planning and coordination, program 3, with various sub-programs, spatial sector and national economic planning, investment for economic development, competitiveness for trade and decent work, economic development, state budgeting and financing and procurement processes, then the green economy. So these are the sub-programs of economic planning and cooperation, with a strategic objective to develop sector, spatial and national economic plans, promoting the development of economic development action plans, with a focus on key and distressed areas in the country, and then building the coherence of provincial and local economic development plans to make sure there's an alignment with the broader objectives and stated goals and aims of the new growth path, promoting economic development in the major sectors of the economy. And then promoting investment for economic development to provide oversight and strategic direction to the development finance institutions, and then ensuring that direct public and, where feasible, appropriate private investment is channeled into economic development activity. Promoting the competitiveness for trade and decent work, that includes oversight of and policy and strategic direction of economic regulatory bodies. Those are the Competition Commission, the Competition Tribunal, and the International Trade Administration Commission. Promoting African and regional economic development, the engagement with international agencies and multilateral institutions, and the pursuance of economic opportunities with major economic groupings. And more recently, that has involved the BRICS, the EU, as well as the USA. Then leveraging state budgeting, financing, and procurement processes, which would include undertaking research and analysis on the developmental programs, and ensure that they are aligned with the new growth path imperatives, and then identifying opportunities for improving local procurement and production. In terms of growing the green economy, then identifying, developing, and supporting projects, incentives, and other measures to promote industries that create jobs and have lower or no carbon emissions in energy, agriculture, manufacturing, and the service sectors, particularly in tourism. And then we have the allocations, the budgetary allocations, although when we get into the actual budget vote, we'll see this is the budget which also houses the transfers which we make to the agencies and the development finance institutions under our purview. But the budget for this program is EDD, and its EDD commitments, 35 rising to 44 to the MTEF, with projected personnel numbers of 33 rising to 38. In economic development and dialogue, a number of sub-programs, including National Social Dialogue and Strategic framework sector, workplace, social dialogue, capacity building for economic development, and productivity, entrepreneurship, and innovation. Strategic objectives being to lead national social dialogue, implement strategic frameworks, and that involves consulting on and coordinating government policy input and contributions to social dialogue on economic development matters, negotiating national economic development and decent work pacts, and coordinating the implementation of framework agreements. And of course, there's a lot of focus at this particular point in time on social dialogue with the partners around the New Growth Path itself, and focusing on specific areas and interventions of the New Growth Path where low-hanging fruit, if one could put it, could be identified, where there is a broader consensus, for example, in the area of skills development. The green economy would be another one. The engagement in sector and workplace dialogue, developing partnership agreements in key sectors and workplaces, supporting capacity building for economic development. That does involve promoting research output and knowledge among social partners through the establishment and administration of a social partner fund. The convening of an economic advisory panel, the creation and coordination of knowledge networks, and convening an annual economic development conference, which we've just been through. And then fostering productivity, entrepreneurship, and innovation, develop a policy framework for increasing productivity, enhancing innovation and entrepreneurship. The allocation, $16 million, rising to $19 million through the NTEF, and the minimum targets, $14 million, rising to $16 million, and again, really dictated by budget availability. We have been engaging within the department in risk management and assessment and mitigation processes, and clearly staff turnover is a risk. It is a challenge. Coming into a new department, trying to establish itself within the terrain of the economic sector, and retaining staff is obviously a challenge. The pace at which we recruit personnel, there are processes and systems that we have to follow in order to comply with the Public Service Act requirements. The adequacy of internal controls, which is one of the constraints we face. We do have to have adequate numbers of staff in place to segregate duties in financial and HR management, otherwise we will be unable to comply with some corporate governance, let alone the requirements of the Auditor General. We will open ourselves up to maladministration and corruption. The reliability of asset management, of course, asset management is the major cause of qualified audits across the public service and local government, and it is a challenge if one is in the detail where we are at this particular point in time, coming in as a new department, getting into the DPI, even before I arrived, assets moving in to the ministry, then having to come back, track them all, document them, register them. A lot of work has to go into these important corporate governance activities, and the availability of offshore accommodation I've already identified. The external risks include coordination across government. Coordination across government, normally successful coordination, does rely on a strong legislative mandate. One can attest to that having been Director General of the DPSA for a long period of time, almost 6 years, that one does require a strong legislative backup to really be able to get, not necessarily compliance, but cooperation and participation at the appropriate level to really become an effective coordinator for government. The engagement with social partners, obviously that's a very delicate process that one needs to manage. Currently, the minister is managing it very directly in terms of the New Growth Path to make sure that we are able to keep social partners on board. I think we are all very aware that successful implementation of job creation initiatives does rely very heavily on cooperative work with the private sector in particular for its success. Then the accuracy of data and statistics, information accuracy is very important for all government departments, but obviously for us, we do need to be in a position to be able to assess just the very basic issue we're looking at, employment job numbers, how they change over time, but also very importantly, what is the impact of various initiatives by government departments in terms of their policy and programs on job creation. This is a completely new area we're discovering that many government departments, I'm sure all South Africans say job creation is critical, but you ask government departments, well, you come with this new policy initiative or this new program, what are the job prospects, directly or indirectly, that you will create through that? They don't have the systems in place to tell us what they need to do in that case. So accurate information is absolutely fundamental to the work that we do. Moving then very briefly onto the public entities, we have the Development Finance Institutions, the IDC, with a big focus on ensuring that the IDC re-gears itself to effectively support the new growth path and the industrial policy action plan. And then we are looking in terms of the announcement in the State of the Nation address where the President indicated the government would be looking at the possibility of merging institutions dealing or operating within small business environments. And the IDC has a small business loan book, and then CUDA, the next one, also obviously is one of the institutions that we are familiar with, and then SAMA, the South African Micro APEC Fund. So I think really what we're looking to at the moment, we are in a process of bringing these institutions together, most likely in the form of a subsidiary of the IDC, where we would have a dedicated focus on small business and microfinance lending. Then in terms of the economic regulatory bodies, the Competition Commission, obviously a big focus in the new growth path on competition policy, improving competitiveness of the economy, and ensuring that we don't have uncompetitive behavior. Competition Commission's profile has certainly risen in previous months. They have secured more resources. We have been working with them in the National Treasury to increase their budget allocations, but they also do have a space challenge, again, on the DTI campus. Competition Tribunal, as we know, is a quasi-judicial body which is governed by the Competition Act, and we're very much focusing on trying to ensure that it's able to be efficient in the manner in which it deals with the cases which come before it. And the ITAC, the International Trade Administration Commission, also ensuring that it aligns itself to the developmental agenda of government with its key outputs of international trade instruments and technical advice. Now, one of the things we have been doing as EDD is to establish a dashboard of indicators which allows us to measure the efficiency and effectiveness, and we will be ready at any time to engage the commission on some of those around the dashboard, which tries to measure on an ongoing basis risk of efficiency to the ratios of administrative overhead to actual operations, and also turnaround time, and so on. Now, this table merely shows us the transfers from EED to the different entities and the patterns as envisioned through the MTEF. But should the pilot prove to be effective, then we are hopeful that through the new merged entity, greater allocations would be secured. SAMA, the numbers rising from 90 to 98 million, the competition commission rising from 135 million, competition tribunal 15 to 16 million, ITAC 69 to 76 million, and the IDC, really, this is a new item, and this deals with the Agro Competitiveness Fund, which was established after the Pioneer Settlement, and order issued by the Competition Tribunal, which required the Pioneer to pay into the revenue fund 250 million. So this will be phased in the manner illustrated here, and we will transfer the money to the IDC. Otherwise, the IDC, this is a new item, the IDC does not normally receive transfers from the government. And then those are the totals, how they total up. And then to move into the budget itself, the budget vote itself, we have really gone through this, so I'm not going to read through it again, but this is really the program structure in one consolidated diagram. Economic policy, economic planning and coordination, economic development, dialogue and administration, and then the various sub-programs. This table gives us the actual allocations over time. Obviously, there's no precedent in terms of the audited outcomes, and 2009-10, very small amount because the target has been started from scratch. And then we have the adjusted appropriation for 2010-11, the revised estimate, and then the medium-term expenditure estimates for current financial year, the next two. And then broken down by program. So really what we're talking about if we look at the current allocation in the region of 464 million, and then we come up to 594 million. So the department we're talking about for this financial year budget of 120 million is what we're really talking about to do our work. So that's the number we're looking at. Obviously the agencies and the funds that we're transferring and managing the transfer process, it does figure in our budget. And of course that number is quite important. Okay, then the transfers, again, we have already gone through this, so I wouldn't want to really dwell on it. It does give historical information, which is on the previous table. And we can return to if we just look at the trends of expenditure, expected to increase from 449 million to 713 million. So if you look at the previous financial year going through to the outer year of the MTEF, that's the increase we're looking at. But it's mainly the increase is mainly around the transfers to the agencies. So there is quite a big anticipated increase in competition commission playing an increasingly important role. It will require additional capacity, particularly to pursue the investigations of anti-competitive behavior. The IDC, as I've explained, is for the Agro-Processing Competitiveness Fund. And then Kula to implement the Kula Direct pilot project, and we hope if that proves successful that we'll be able to increase the allocation. Of course, there will be other sources of funding, especially through the merged entity. We'll be able to draw on the IDC book more broadly, but also hopefully we'll be able to increase the allocations. And Kula at the moment, and ultimately the merged entity, will also look at sourcing investment funding from the PIC. And then ITAC, the increases there are mainly at the moment the budgeted increases in the transfers are around the personnel side. So there's no major operational increases in funding that are envisaged in terms of the allocation. Now, these are the performance indicators which are in the budget. These are the indicators we've been working against during the previous financial year, with some modifications and elaborations, if one likes. So one can see in the 2010-11 there are a few dashes. That's because from this financial year we've developed new indicators. So the number of reports on the implementation of the new growth path, policy and analytical papers, sector plans, value of special financing facilitated for small businesses, number of reports on the implementation of interventions to address cost drivers, the number of interventions leveraging state expenditure and procurement per year, the number of special plans produced, the number of reports on the implementation of the green economy strategy, the number of interventions to save or create new jobs, the number of policy platforms, social dialogue, and capacity building engagements per year, and the number of economic development agreements facilitated with social partners per year. So these are the targets that we've set ourselves, and this is what we would need to achieve in terms of the international expenditure. This runs through the objectives and measures. I'll go through it relatively quickly because it obviously it does align with the strategic plan which has already been presented. But this would focus on the strategic and operational support to the principals, planning and reporting, support for management meetings, the reviewing of the organogram to align it with budget, implementation of the recruitment plan, the disengagement from DTI, the migration from the DTI, the internal controls, the establishment of legal and communication support services. Program 2, focus on monitoring the implementation of the new growth path, issuing policy papers, convening policy platforms, analytical data on the real economy, economic development index, developing a formal and quantified framework model, developing broad-based black economic empowerment policy frameworks, Economic Development Institute, and then the development and implementation of monitoring systems for youth employment in the second economy. Program 3, producing proposals for the National Planning Commission's consideration, as well as cabinets and provinces, coordinating and developing sector plans for key sectors, developing proposals for harmonizing national, provincial, and local economic development plans, development of social economic development action plans, policy, strategy, and budgetary oversight over the DFIs and economic regulatory bodies, and then the strategy to enhance investment for economic development. Papers which look at how we leverage it in procurement to enhance developmental priorities, promoting international relations strategy through engagement with regional and international agencies, growing the green economy, and then growing the agro-processing sector by coordinating government and private sector players, as well as the establishment of a dedicated fund, which obviously is initiated by the Pioneer Settlement to support enhanced competitiveness. Program 4, convening national social dialogue forums, facilitating social pact in the workplace, monitoring and reporting on implementation of framework agreements and social pact, the hosting of learning events and economic development learning networks, the development conference itself, and convening the economic advisory panel. In conclusion, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, Deputy Minister, we have actually established a new department in less than 2 years. We do have initial capacity in place. We do have a profile. We've been central in the development of two very important strategic frameworks, the new growth path and then the outcome four framework with its delivery agreement and outcomes, outputs, and sub-outputs. We have made good progress in implementing the 2010-11 to 2012-13 strategic plan, given the considerable capacity constraints which have confronted us. We don't have a problem of budget shortfall at the moment, but there is adequate provision in the medium term for personnel and capital expenditure. The 2011-12 to 2015-16 strategic plan builds on the 2010-11 to 2012-13 strategic plan. But there is a new impetus on coordination, monitoring and evaluation and reporting in relation to the implementation of the new growth path. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, PG. Guillaume, is there anything you want to add on that? Okay, anyone of the department that wants to add on that? PG has done that quite a good job. Honourable members, before we proceed, a couple of members has arrived, and we don't know who they are. I think the Deputy Minister, specifically Mrs. Chacham, Swaz, Taika, would like to know who you are, so if you can just introduce yourself to them, please.
Thanks, Chair. I'm Bintani Karnate from Mazarin. Just give us a deadline will be filled by such a day. One query will just go oversight on that day. The other one is the cooler direct pilot. I'm not sure whether you're not confident that it will not succeed by not making provision for fund, for further funding. You still want to have a look. I'm sure in your research and studies, you would have known by now that this really could have directed going to succeed and make some provision for further funding, that we don't have a gap at the end of this financial year, or of 6 to 9 months when we're still looking for funding. On the funding for the IDC and the transfers to the IDC, what informs that treble increase? Is it from 38 to 10 something, 108? What informs that, that transfer? Will it be speaking to the NGP or to job creation? Why would the IDC have this treble increase? And lastly, we have said that departments maybe want to be able to say how many jobs they create, but we do expect from this department to hint up also. How many jobs can we create? The department and the initiative, as it was mentioned in the State of the Nation. Thanks.
Honorable
Speaker. I'm happy that the minister is here, because you know it's always easy to engage the officials because they say now it's policy issues, you can't respond. But I've got two issues that I want to raise. And given the fact that we fortunately now just come out of the economic conference that we attended in Johannesburg, so which I must compliment the department, I think it was a good exercise of the quality of the conflict of the input system. The one issue has got to do with the uncertainty regarding the roles of this department and the function of the National Planning Commission and the Minister in the Office of the President. Now, I must say, I informally took it up with the DG to say, but why is the Minister not here? I mean, referring not here, but the Minister, Trevor Manuel. Why didn't he attend? Because it was quite obvious that none of these departments, or none of these officials were involved in that whole program. Now, it's more than just not being there. As an outsider, it seems that there's a clash of interpretation about how his government takes this whole economic debate forward. And for me as a member of the opposition, it's quite obvious that, or no, it's not obvious, but it seems that there's a problem between the two departments and even between the two ministers, the two ministries and so on. We don't need it. We need a central message of how we're going to address this very serious issue of unemployment and so on. The second issue is the last year in the economic sphere, the debate that sort of that affected the whole environment was built on two or three issues. The first one, Deputy Minister, was the issue about nationalization. Now we know, and the Minister of Mineral Resources comes to the committee and she confirms, but it's not our policy. But that unfortunate remarks by some members of the governing party continuously for the impact in terms of many of the things that we want to achieve. That very noble idea of 5 million jobs by 2015. That is the first one. The other issue is the issue about the uncertainty popularity. We've just been this morning been briefed by the NES. You know, and there's so many wonderful ideas and programs, but investors don't want to come in and do the right thing, that is to invest, because of these things. You know, and in 5-10 years back, maybe you would have said crime was a big issue. Crime is still a big issue, yes, but the current debate being dictated by these two issues, nationalization and the uncertainty that specifically that is not so defined. So, from a policy position, Minister, can you try and clarify? I hope you can make me comfortable to convince people to invest in it. Because many of these things, what the DP presented, one can't find fault in it, that's fine. But at the end of the day, it's about the implementation. And if you attended the input, for instance, by somebody like Professor Adam, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if it's here or the RDP or the National Growth Park or whatever. It's about the implementation. And that's what we want to do. Thank you.
Chair, on this presentation, and also in the first plan, that's where they are talking of improving the DFI, and that they are aligned to a new growth path. I just want to find out what happened to the report that was commissioned by the administrator about 3 years ago on the discussion of the DFI. But as far as I know, I see the last time of the 3,000 that was also coming down from the specificity. The program too. I think they reported there's some sub programs on economic policy and economic development and institutional research. When I read through those objectives, it's more or less the representation. Is there any implication in program two in economic policy and cultural and student research? And then also talking about the alleviating or I'm sitting next to a farmer. I'm seeing and complaining of a lot of taxes on the MMP and online business. Ready for that, and pay for that. They said they are very honored. Can't press the MMP, we can't press the government to do something that we eliminate or pay less taxes or we try to take it to the not for the owners, but they end up paying a lot of taxes and increasing their production costs. Can you address the department that you have some more explanation on the tax credit on the MMPs and how they compensate if they increase the fees? And also, you're talking about a competitive exchange rate. Now, the economy is like the local exchange rate we have in South Africa on the approaching exchange rate. And perhaps the department can clarify that the competitive exchange rate, because the family argue that when the rent is strong, when the exchange rate is appreciate, and then business grows, some will turn off, and on the other hand, where they can better buy the things cheaper when the rent is strong. Now, what is actually that competitive exchange rate that we think might be short for that rate?
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. My favorite topic. I see you focus on women and youth as well as disabled people. And
still unreleased.
Chairman, thank you. Yeah, just to the slightly tongue-in-cheek, when the DTI is referred to in your presentation, it's more like DDD. Wonder if there's any implication about it. It was certainly tongue-in-cheek. I don't need a response. And this is an equally tongue-in-cheek response. Just the Economic Development Institute that you referred to, the establishment thereof, is there any thoughts yet about where that would be established? Would it be under the auspices of the university or something like that? And then just generally, there is a particular program which refers to productivity, but I get the feeling that productivity hasn't got the emphasis I think it should have. And perhaps you can respond and tell me I'm wrong or why that emphasis isn't there. I'm talking about the productivity in industry and that kind of thing, rather than in your department. I'm talking about the economic part. Because skills, surely, there's quite a bit of reference to skills enhancement and competitiveness. But underpinning that, I would have thought, was productivity.
I thought you assist Honorable Minister at this stage introducing himself as Honorable for his goals with the party. You can't do good with the opposition. You hear me? You can't do it. Two questions, Chair. The first one is in relation to the approved organogram. As it has been said, it's not fully funded. If you check program one, I think it's like 19 where it's used to publish it. It's not the organizational structure of the organogram. This is the budget program. That is why you have administration and so on. So I don't know whether we can have the slide or we can have a copy of the organogram so that it can really assist us, linked to what has been raised by Honorable Matamba. Because if you check the public entities, almost all of them were part of the PTI. And the world that structure that is in the SDGI. And it will even assist us when doing oversight, dealing with the EPGI to see. Because we didn't have those warm bodies there, and now it's part of the economic development. Then the second one, it's about the MOU that governs the relationship between the department and EPGI. If we can have a little bit of elaboration so that we can have a sense. Because when we happen to have it, I did not get that quite clear. So I wanted to have a sense so that when we talk about it, we must be able to see what doing oversight and this MOU that we have with the EPGI. Those are the two questions that you have.
Thank you. Honorable Samia?
I was happy to hear that we were going to cut red tape. But in the same thing, I heard that we are going to improve the regulatory framework, which I don't know if that's the same thing. Now, if we need to address our employment rate in South Africa, and we want to go 3.4% flat or increase it by that, to what extent is the department facing the reality or negotiating with the Department of Labour as to what is happening to the market? Because a lot of jobs are frozen or possibly sanctioned stop because of the labor relations. And then if we go on, we talk about the social partner fund, and I'd like to know under whose authority that's going to be. And then you talk about grow the agro processing sector, establishing a dedicated fund to support enhanced competitiveness. Maybe you can explain that to us also, please.
that we put all of the parts. So, from government perspective, such a discussion do not exist at all. As to, it's going to be difficult to say in a democratic policy people can't hold views and they can't express those views in an open and broader political discourse, which where democratic policies are entitled to do that. We can't constrain people. So we are a mass part of that. I mean, that's the party of the ruling body of referendum. So there's no such a thing. Thanks, sir. I wanted just to clarify.
I'd like to ask the minister. If there is no such policy for nationalisation, why then are some people within the ruling party given the opportunity in the precinct of parliament to debate the subject? Because that is accommodating then somebody's own opinion.
I wouldn't comment on the procedures of parliament. What I would comment on is that people are entitled to put on the agenda any debate in my size. People can put anything for debate. Where democratic policy, we should not be afraid to engage in democratic debate. No doubt about it. But all I'm saying to you, there's no such a policy by government at all.
I think on the CUDA Direct, it would probably be worthwhile if Saul elaborates on the CUDA Direct, but I think your question was very much, you know, why are we hesitant, are we uncertain? I think it's important to say that we're not uncertain ourselves, but Treasury wants to see this thing succeed. So Treasury did the actual allocation. We had applied for more funds, even in the amount that were allocated. Then obviously based on the success of the pilot, Treasury will make, well, not Treasury alone, of course there will be a Ministerial Committee on the budget, which will be the key decision maker, backed up by the technical work which the Treasury does. But that's why we do have that situation at the moment. Just to clarify, the funding on the IDC, Agro Competitiveness Fund, there were a couple of questions related to that. The one question was, you know, why does it treble? Just to clarify, that fund comes from the Pioneer Settlement and the order of the Competition Tribunal that $250 million should be dedicated to an agro-processing competitiveness fund. It is the first time that we are transferring funds to the IDC. The IDC will host that fund and manage that fund. And it was considered wise, because it is a new fund, that the money gets phased in. And the money will really go to the support of new players, new entrants into the area of agro-processing. To obviously provide them with funding and support at very, very competitive rates in order to assist them to enter the sector and become successful in the sector. So that's really why the amount is increasing, to allow this year to get things up and running. Having said that, we should also recognize the amounts that were announced by the Minister in his budget speech in the National Assembly, where the IDC is making $102 billion available over the next 3 years for a number of these initiatives. So there will be a further amount in the region of $7.7 billion for the agricultural value chain. So yes, that is a specific fund which emerged in the context of the Pioneer Settlement, but there will be further development funding available for those who participate in the agricultural value chain. The issue of how many jobs EDD will create, I think it sort of raises a question which needs to be, you see, the issue is direct and indirect creation of jobs. So direct, you've asked me to actually make commitments on in terms of the vacancies on our establishment. But we participate in other initiatives. So there is a $9 billion amount jobs fund that was announced by the President in the State of the Nation address, which Treasury will basically administer, although it's likely to be done through the DBSA. Now, we will be influential in the manner in which that fund is executed. Will it be solely a challenge fund where people come with proposals, or will we identify a number of areas where proactively funding could be made available for job creation? So that would be an area where we would also be influencing job creation. Obviously, if the new growth path is implemented in according with the visioning and planning of this framework, then there will be a whole series of indirect impacts that we will have as a department. Now, what this question raises is, how will we as EDD measure job creation? And it's a complex question which we're grappling with very proactively at the moment. We are in the process of setting up a transversal monitoring evaluation system. There is some relationship to the issue of Stats South Africa as well. Obviously, Stats South Africa, through the quarterly employment surveys and the quarterly labor force surveys, comes up with numbers around job creation. New jobs, it also talks to job losses. So if their data is accurate, we are able to get accurate numbers around net new jobs, how many jobs were created each quarter as we go forward. And obviously we've got historical records to trace the patterns. What the system we are trying to develop will do, and I mentioned it also when I made the thing for this, we want government departments to start looking at their policies and their programs. In order to be able to say, through this policy intervention, through this programmatic intervention, this was the impact in terms of job creation. So we're actually starting that process. We developed templates. We need to establish a knowledge network within the public service of monitoring evaluation practitioners in each and every department who will understand the system, know how to operate it, know how to fill in those templates accurately, so that over time we would be in a position to really answer the question on indirect job creation. I actually think it's a risk to keep pushing departments to give the number of job creators, because someone like me is just going to start filling posts for the sake of filling posts without really seeing, will this make a difference to service delivery? Will the filling of this post really enhance service delivery, enhance the broad policy objectives which we are pursuing as government? The real issue becomes, what is the indirect impact? Because I think we all are saying that the private sector, 80% of job creation is going to be in the private sector. And some of that 80% will be influenced by the policy framework, the issue of the regulatory framework, which has been raised as a question. I think part of what we are doing in this initiative is the regulatory impact assessment. We would have to look at laws and rules and procedures and say whether they are advancing job creation, slowing it down, or even retarding job creation. These are the questions which need to be confronted honestly through that process that I'm talking about. I think we do want to cut red tape. We want to minimize regulation. But improvement might be minimizing. It might actually be saying, well, look, this particular regulation has no value. It needs to be removed. The issue of the labor market, though, is obviously a sensitive question. There is a whole process underway. We do engage with the Department of Labor through the cluster, which is the structure of ministers, but also the structure of officials that supports the ministers. But I do think that is, well, I think everyone appreciates it. quite a sensitive area. I'll come to the other questions in policy. Yes, Honourable Sinclair has raised that question. I think about the National Planning Commission and the working relationship between ourselves and the National Planning Commission. I think that they need to be improved and strengthened. There is a question, though, which I think I can safely pose to this. One which I certainly pose to myself, especially in terms of my own background, and that is the institutional architecture of economic governance. National Treasury, CPI, National Planning Commission, Economic Development, Rural Development, Departments of Economic Development, we call it, economic debt sort of partners. Metro level, local government level. It's something that clearly we have to talk about and influence in a direction which ensures that this architecture is not only rational, but is talking to one another. I think that is, for me, is a fundamental question. And I think it's linked to what Honourable Sinclair is grappling with and asking. Because I'm also saying not simply those two, ourselves and the National Planning Commission. It's also rural development, also the National Collective, also the DPI. And the coordinating mechanisms to some extent have changed in government. The cluster system, which is very much a horizontal coordinating system during the previous administration, has to some extent been replaced by the system which supports the outcome-based monitoring system. It's a system of horizontal coordination, but also vertical coordination, where in some of the key priority areas, such as health and education, you have the MINNEP playing a very vital role. At a national level, because the institutional framework for ensuring that the education and health outcomes are achieved is the MINNEP. So that links the MINNEP in with cabinet processes, and that is actually a positive development, because vertical coordination is probably a bigger problem than horizontal coordination in many respects. So the report for the National Treasury on the DFIs, I'm also in a position where, we'll get Saul to have some information on that. So when he makes his input, he will address that as well. You were worried also, Honorable Nguni, that there might be some implication in terms of the economic policies and sector strategies sub-program overlapping with the Economic Development Institute. I think clearly, as we sort of consolidate our efforts to establish this institute, we would need to ensure that we minimize duplication. And it could be, depending on how it pans out, that institute actually services a number of different programs and some programs of the department. But I do think that we acknowledge that question as something that we do need to think through carefully as we establish the institute to make sure that we're not duplicating, because that does happen, as the Honourable Member confirms, there are, that you do have within single departments, large ones, you have duplication happening within a single department. So it would be bad enough if you've got duplication and overlaps between departments, but within departments, of course, it's untenable, but it does exist. I take that as a red flag that we need to study quite carefully as we go forward. The competitive exchange rate is one of those complex questions. It is highly contested. There are different views within the bureaucracy. There are different views within the political level as well as to how best to deal with that competitive exchange rate. I think, you know, the fundamental issues really are that the kind of growth we had, the so-called jobless growth, was very much predicated upon the financial sector. And, you know, basically when we have or the impact of capital inflows, which have, you know, been part of that growth, is that they contribute to a lot of volatility in the exchange rate. So it's not only about competitiveness in the exchange rate, it's also about volatility. Can we control the big movements in the exchange rate? For the manufacturing sector in particular, there is a strong push for a depreciation in the exchange rate because it would support our export competitiveness in national and regional markets. That would be good for local manufacturing. But you see, capital inflows, this is where the tension comes with national treasury, are very important at the moment in terms of dealing with the budget deficit. So I think these are some of the tensions in the system which are difficult to manage. So it's a difficult question for me to answer definitively. I would be very nervous to put a number. Those numbers definitely do get discussed. What would a competitive exchange rate be? Would it be 8.9 rand to the dollar, etc., etc.? Would it be 7.5? Would it be 10, there are different views on the matter, but I think it's a contentious and technical question which is better for me as a humble civil servant in the Economic Development Department not to try and answer definitively. But hopefully what I've said does help you in terms of questions that you posed. I think the role of the Economic Development Institute would be potentially dynamic in terms of the kind of research that is needed to support the various programs we are involved in. What form it would take is the subject of what we're grappling with at the moment. So would we simply have a sub-program in EDD and try and attract staff in the normal way and just be sitting right in the department of sub-program? Would we create some sort of an agency within EDD, an arm's length from EDD? I think these are some of the key questions. I mean, there obviously are precedents in other parts of the state of research and training institutions which have been set up in different ways with different corporate forms. Could it be a government component, which is a new corporate form, where it could be fully accountable to the minister? Would it be semi-autonomous with its own board? I think the key question in whatever corporate form we choose is how could we attract the best talent into the institute to produce the quality of work that is required and that we would not be able to secure through normal public service recruitment processes and having it sitting in the department simply as a sub-program. I think in finalizing those questions, one would be able to talk with greater confidence as to what the corporate form would be. But clearly, there is a need for EDD at the moment to have full access to whether it's a component, a body, or whatever that can produce the quality of research required, that can produce the accuracy of information. We can't duplicate what Stats South Africa is doing. We need to use the information. We also need to be able to interrogate the accuracy of the information. We can't go out and start doing quarterly labor force surveys. That doesn't make any sense. But often, from Stats South Africa, we get tables and tables, and hopefully they are accurate. There needs to be a value add. There needs to be an interpretation. You know. And that goes to a broad range of their data, not only their labor force data as well. There's been an engagement with productivity, just to say that it is an area where we've filled a position recently, a senior person has come in. I think initially the focus would be more on trying to see if we can secure some workplace productivity pact or sectoral productivity pact. I think the emphasis on productivity is something that few of us would want to have any argument with at all. The question is how do we go about tackling this problem? And initially at least the thinking is that if we could get some workplace sectoral productivity agreements or accords in place, that's how we would want to launch it. So the person is really being asked to focus on a couple of sectors and come up with a methodology of achieving productivity accords. There has been some work done in the coding sector in some of the areas where we've been asked to intervene and support certain processes. But I think it's work which needs to be developed by facilities. Okay, on the approved organogram, a question, can we have a copy of the organogram? I think what we can undertake to do, because we did make a presentation to the portfolio committee, we had a similar question. We actually made a presentation. Perhaps we could forward that presentation to the committee for the consideration. Obviously, gives the approved organogram, gives other information which hopefully will be useful in the oversight board that is required. the MOU. The MOU focuses very much on the corporate function. So it could focus on financial management and really breaking it down into the different areas of financial management, including asset management, human resource management, security services, facilities management, IT, legal services, and so on. The back office really of enterprise. The MOU for our previous financial year, recognized an almost total dependency which we had on the DTI. But we are gradually developing capacity to deal with some of these functions. So the one which we are in the process of signing now begins to withdraw in certain areas. Maybe not in a blanket way, because when one gets into the detail, one begins to break down HR into HR administration and the management of the transversal systems, which is basically personal in HR. On the finance side, it's tax, financial accounting, etc. What we're doing is looking at an incremental migration of some of the functions. But I think it's an area if more information is required, if the chair would indicate to us, then I think we can provide additional information on that. Just to say where the biggest challenge would be is IT, the transversal system. So yes, we can begin to create the capacities to manage the network, the hardware and the software, but in the transversal systems is where the biggest risks lie. So as we migrate and take over administration of that personal and building, if we don't have our capacities fully developed and in place, then we do run major risks there. So that one. The Social Partner Fund. What we're doing at the moment is using our budget allocation, and we have a program which is beginning to take off with all the labor federations, the three big labor federations, where we want to place researchers to do sectoral analysis. So in the motor industry, chemical industry, and so on. And it is a collaborative arrangement. There may be work that we would also want to do in the SME space with the various associations and bodies. So I think over time what we'll look at would be the creation of a facility which could be augmented to other funding forms, and where we would have steering committee of the social partners which would oversee the management of the fund and its allocation. So I think at the moment, in terms of this pilot program that we're putting in place, certainly the steering of that is very much a collaborative process between ourselves and the Labour Federation. But over time, as it gets more elaborate, we might have to look into new arrangements, which obviously have to be governed by the requirements of the Public Finance Management Act and so on and so forth, especially if we're going to try and bring in additional funding. There are other funding opportunities. I've spoken about the jobs fund. There's also the Employment Creation Fund, which is an EU facility of approximately 100 million euros. So there's a lot of funding for partnership. That one is really sort of administered by, well, DTI takes the lead, but the Treasury and EDB are involved in that one as well. So I think at the moment we want to look at the kind of programs we can put in place and how they can be funded, and over time then look at what form a dedicated social I think the important point I'm trying to make is at the moment the ideas we've had around what programs could be funded, we are proceeding with those, because only funding is in the crisis right now in relation to the kinds of things we wanted to do. Okay, I think I've answered the question that even Honorable Chairperson, I do agree that's what I would say in the other part. We don't want to replace or duplicate what they do. We want to try and add analytical value to the information which they produce. So we want to use their information. And increasingly, as we use their information, we would have to stress test it to make sure that it's robust.
Just before you proceed further, I just want to put it in the record of the clear court statement. The Deputy Minister left with your approval, Honourable Fahmy, to get it from the Deepak Land Away. That's just on record, because yours is in the record of the Deepak Land Away. Left with your approval. So that's a minute. Deputy Minister left with the approval of Honourable Fahmy.
Honourable Chairperson, if I may, before my colleagues come in, because I noticed when you introduced the meeting, the apologies that the Minister went for, because the Minister has a commitment to the deputies and there is a meeting that he has to attend, and so he did ask me to send a given apology, which I think is actually a good job.
Thank you, Chairperson. On some of the issues that we've been asking to touch on, regarding the Kula Direct pilot, okay, so the Kula Direct pilot is very much a pilot, and because Kula up to this point has been doing wholesale lending, and new game for them to go into direct lending. So even though there has been work done and studies done, it's not something that they can wake up one day and say this is going to be a successful venture. So the money that's been allocated, even though we would have liked it for a longer period, as we need to indicate, the National Treasury is allocated for the first year. We're looking at using that 55 million to learn lessons, build models, get an understanding of how Kula should be operating as a direct lender, and develop all the systems so that it can operate effectively in the market. Because we don't want to just sort of throw money at a problem and then we end up creating more problems for ourselves. So it's really just an opportunity for us to get into the space properly and coherently. With that 55 million, it's not going to make a huge dent. Depending on the size of the loans, and they're targeting loan sizes from 250,000 to 500,000. From 50,000 to 500,000. Because that's where the biggest gap is. They'll get approximately or up to 400 businesses that might be citing there, depending on the loan size. But it gives them an opportunity to test themselves. And then if it works and they're able to properly engage, then they will look at additional allocations. And also, even though the funding is allocated for 12 months, it doesn't mean the pilot has to run for 12 months. So if we really tune in with the spread testing of their system, if we really sooner, then we can put in additional resources sooner, either so they can go to the market or through the IDC they can add additional funds. Or if it takes them longer than 12 months, then we will then at a later stage. But we'll make sure that there is continuity in terms of funding so that we don't have an 8-month delay. And we'll make sure that we, as a department, are watching the progress. So we've got a commitment from them, a monthly report on how things are progressing, so we can already see quite early on in the process where problems will arise and where interventions or institutional funding is required. And and we've really started to put in place the mechanism to run future funding of the Kuda Direct. On the DFI restructuring report, the report was done, and I can't comment as to why you didn't receive it, it was not adequate to get the report. It's not like the report has just sort of disappeared. It's still a useful document, and it does propose and make recommendations on a few things. One of them was for a DFI council, which is the council of ministers, ministerial structure. That structure has not been set up. There was some discussions on this, but as I'm aware, the discussions, the meeting didn't happen, so those discussions haven't happened. So I'm not sure of the future of that structure. But beneath that, we were looking at sort of a DFI coordinating structure with officials. And there has been some meetings on that. So it's still early days, so I think the report's only finalized last year. So there has been meetings of officials, and we'll see where that process goes to. But the idea is really to try and get better coordination amongst the DFI and the government departments that oversee that. And then another recommendation, and several recommendations in the report, were around rationalizing the DFI. And while CBD didn't take up the specific proposal around how that report suggested we should rationalize the DFI that are reporting into us, we have taken up the rationalization of the DFI because we recognize that the oversight, the governance, the leadership, the systems are all the same no matter how big your institution. So if we have microfinance separated from Kula, then we still have to have all sorts of things in place in order to be an effective and functional institution. So by rationalizing and pulling together, as the DG mentioned, the South African Microfinance Ethics Fund and Kula Enterprise, we're able to get some benefits. Because we don't need two CEOs, we don't need two COOs, we don't need two heads of HR, we don't need two heads of marketing, we don't need a chief risk officer, So we can get a lot of economies of scale by bringing things together. But it doesn't mean that we lose the focus of what that institution would offer. And that's still having a product on microfinance, so that we make sure that that's still consistent. So that's how we've taken that recommendation on board. And I'm aware that some of the other recommendations by other DFIs, other sectors, for example, agriculture, that they are going through a similar process. So I think the report was useful, and maybe you need to speak to the line department to get your copy of it. On the issue around the tax burden on SMEs, I think the DG spoke to the regulatory impact assessment issue, so it's not only tax, but also a number of other regulations. And it's part of the cross-cutting work that our department would do to work with other departments around trying to improve the enabling environment for small business and create an enabling environment for small business. So we would be engaging with all the other departments and I suppose dealing with issues around the tax burden. Certainly part of that. And the issue that's come up repeatedly is particularly around VAT, where it's a big concern for a lot of small businesses, where they pay VAT on billing rather than on income, and get the cash flow. So some of those issues we are engaging on, and we'll see if we successful. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair, honourable members. I'll come in on the question of links that are directed by the DG, and then I'll also indulge in some questions on the other issues. The question from honourable member Abraham was around how many jobs. The first part of it was around the omission of people with disabilities from the test. The Gold Path makes reference specifically to inclusiveness and that was taken as a part of that more drives for more inclusive labor absorbing economy. But that is simply not the first time that we've had that input, and we would need to bring that out more strongly and to be able to present to our role members the specific challenges of the disabled as opposed to women and youth with regards to inclusiveness or being included in the mainstream economy. The second part of Honourable Abraham's question was on EDD's own contribution to job creation and absorption of women, youth, and people with disabilities. Now, I think that the first part of the answer was addressed by Vinici when he clarified again that departments create jobs through two avenues. Direct employment, so the issue of the staff that they employ themselves, and then through setting a more conducive environment which would enable job creation broader outside of their own department. EDD, unlike a department of health, which might need to ramp up the employment of nurses and doctors to meet other strategic priorities such as improvements in health or education, EDD's job creation will mainly be of the second manner, which is an indirect one, one which would be about creating the environment, one which would be about finding the blockages and dealing with them for the jobs that are created elsewhere. So when we do tally up, we do so hold ourselves accountable as to what we've been doing, and the DG recently did a quick informal audit just to see what the role of our work was and the specific impacts of it. And with regards to youth and the other ones as well, we have to be careful when we do the national tallying that we don't double count. So if through the work of EDD we were able to unlock jobs somewhere along the system, say for example in mining through cooperation with DMR, we need to be careful that we don't come and report and then a DMR or province reports the same jobs and then they get added up to 200 jobs instead of being 600 jobs. So that's just a small note of caution. In having said that, I will say that there are several different avenues which we are pursuing with regards to youth employment. The first one was actually towards the tail end of last financial year, which was concluded, and that was some work with the Department of Water Affairs around a project for the youth the project name was called Eco Furnitures, and basically it was the harvesting of the alien species, which is cleared by Department of Environmental Affairs and Water Affairs for environmental and conservation reasons. They do drain our natural water resources and they overpower domestic plants. But then having thus removed them, the opportunity was identified to harvest seeds for further job creation. And those will now be manufactured into depth with the possibility for that project to be expanded much more widely into a low-cost cotton, which has its own complications, but et cetera. But this would also lead to cost savings for public schools while creating jobs for youth and revitalizing rural or semi-rural economies with regards to the production of these debts. The other one, which is much broader, is around the outcome for implementation that the professor also, the DG also referred to. Economic development is leading the work along with the Department of Trade and Industry, all CAP, and National Treasury on the development of a multi-pronged youth employment strategy. Now, the strategy takes, the work takes two separate approaches. The first is to start to get to a baseline of how much are we currently spending on youth employment initiatives, which are admittedly quite disparate at the moment, because each department was tasked with the office being in the presidency, was tasked with having its own component which was with something. So most departments have some sort of an intervention, whether there's a policy around it, a strategy around it, whether the institutional arrangements for it are appropriate, and whether the funding is appropriate, and whether there's room to integrate with other departments is what we need to start establishing now. So we're in the process of putting together that baseline. We want to know what is the nature of the intervention, what particular cause of unemployment or cause of poverty, or particular cause of...
Seriously,
1 minute African time or 1 minute... we need to know the nature of the intervention, the particular cause of marginalization or unemployment that's being addressed, as well as the institutional arrangements, the cost, and particularly the cost per job. So the issue that Saul was talking about now was with regards to the rationalization of the agency. It's home as well when we're talking about the different youth initiatives, because they need their own administration where they could be within there could be room for leveraging of each other's current institutional arrangements, current overhead structures, etc. The other side of it is looking at the particular causes and then seeing working backwards from that. So we're working from what is on the table and how relevant is it to the causes, and then working from the causes and seeing of the ones that are currently, or we're working from the causes to the interventions. So of the interventions that are currently in place, and given what we know about the causes and the magnitude in terms of impact, which ones would need to be wrapped up, which ones could be scaled down because their cost per job is not economical, or because we're spending too much for example, on a course which has a lesser impact. So one of the things that we realized, for example, when we started putting this work together, is that small issues such as search costs, information asymmetry. So I've got a degree, but I live in Hamakani somewhere outside of Turfloop, and you don't even know where that is. But how do I even find out about economic opportunities? We know that white youth are less likely to be unemployed, and part of that reason is access to networks, access to people who know about economic opportunities, who are able to point them out and point them to the right direction, not going as far as nepotism or asking the buddy there to give them a job, but just knowledge about this, a lower sense of information asymmetry. And then search costs. If I must now go look for a job and I'm in Turfloop, I need to get on the taxi, I need to have money to start looking for a job. How long will I be able to keep going round trips via taxi to Polokwane town without finding a job? So these are the sort of things that, even before we talk about the other causes, which are skills, the poor outcomes from our the outcomes of our primary schooling infrastructure, these are some of the other things that we're taking up as far as causes which do definitely impact on youth unemployment, that where the gaps have been while they're spending quite a considerable amount of money. We're also working with the SOEs and the DFIs with regards to their ability to absorb more youth through training and learnerships. And the SOEs used to be central the end of apartheid. In terms of the development of artisans, the development of engineers, and we've lost some of that, and that's the work that's now being reassessed or reinvigorated through partnership with Minister Gigaba and Minister Patel and the SOEs. The other avenue is through the process that the DG referred to earlier, which was the dialogue that the minister is leading with social partners, and there it's about as well seeing how much extra capacity there is for training in the private sector. And there already thousands of opportunities have been unlocked just through the minister locking the social partners in a room and beginning to identify opportunities, identify blockages. So the private sector, for example, indicated that they would have extra capacity to train, but that for reasons which would involve a bargaining council, had refrained from doing so, and we have through that process been able to get some compromises that have been to develop, and any announcements that would likely be made by the Minister and the Minister of Higher Education and Training. And then finally, the big one is the Jobs Fund, which is the 9 billion Rand Jobs Fund that the President referred to in the summer earlier this year. And the rules of that are rapidly, or the prioritization of development of those rules has taken place, so we are prioritizing it rather. Maybe I should switch languages, Chair, with your indulgence, but the rules of the Jobs Fund are being finalized. And we will hope to be able to publicize it. In the meantime, we are developing some proposals as well, so that when that opens up, there will be some already in the pipeline. In terms of just a few comments outside of that, Honourable Sinclair highlighted the challenges faced by the debate of nationalisation and the issues of land, and the DG and the DM have addressed the issue of nationalisation. I just wanted to say that within the Islamic cluster, again, part of our work really is to do what we started to do there, to see where are the blockages. So working in EDD alone, you might not see it, or EDD in the cluster can be possibly easier, or working in DMR alone, or working in the Department of Border Affairs alone, you might not see where your particular actions or your powers would impact upon this country's ability to rapidly increase the amount of jobs we create. But water licenses, for example, would be added to your list by the economics cluster. The issue around skill development, issues of the red tape and the visa requirements. So there is a not an inexhaustible list, but that kind of thinking is going on, and there are some key issues that you have to take place with regards to all of those. I think that the issue on the exchange rate was very thoroughly dealt with by the DG. I just want to supplement his response by just adding that what we're talking about is essentially it's not just whether it's high or low, but a concern that it's almost deviated from economic fundamentals. So if my exchange rate is increasing because I am moving up the value chain of economic growth and development, that's a different thing to my exchange rate or my exchange rate appreciating due to a policy of quantitative easing or money printing in the United States. So money's been printed for free and being given out at a very low interest rate, and in South Africa we've got an interest rate of 5%. Anybody who can do math would take the 1% interest money and make an overnight profit in South Africa, and that would lead would seem like an appreciation of our exchange rate, but would have nothing to do with actual real economy fundamentals. So that's the other side of the concern, but the other issues as opposed to our growth path and the sectors of the economy which we want to see growing relative to other sectors of the economy have been covered. I think then on the issue of the productivity as well, the DG's last response, I think, was around the capacity building efforts of the Department of Policy Union. I just wanted to point out that that is tightly related to the issue of productivity. The lesson learned from Germany and from Japan versus South Africa is a very different relationship between enterprise, the employer, and the employee. So post World War II, Japan, industry almost took an approach of a lifetime guarantee of employment, which is you couldn't get back here. But that sense of ownership led to a different sort of engagement when it came to issues of productivity. As well in Germany, the German unions are also for their absolute technical understanding of their industry. So the chemicals union, the metals union, have an intricate understanding of the processes, but also of market fundamentals. And so this is, I just wanted to draw in, it's related to the issue about activity is getting, it is very central. And I just want to leave it there. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, Honourable Mbuli, all those in favour.
Chair, thank you. I don't know what the department views on the point at
my issue is to do with the influence that this department plays in terms of the greater sort of economic patterns and development in South Africa. I'm from a province where agriculture is playing a major role. I don't know the exact percentages, but I think it might be the biggest. Now, this past season we had terrible floods, terrible weather patterns, too much rain, and the industry, like the grape industry in the Abington area, has been highly influenced. Now the Minister of Agriculture then goes out and announces, visited the site with the TV cameras and everything, and announced government is going to support in this flood ravaged area. But that support comes down BG to food parcels for the farm workers, and not really the real issues that matter. The real issues are to assist, firstly, those productive entities, which is not farms anymore, it's industry, just to come back to the base where they can then employ people and continue with that development. But because of the approach of government, that area is now bending over to a welfare state and a welfare society. That's reality. Now, if the DG and the department and the minister can use the influence in terms of what we heard yesterday to say no, Minister of Agriculture or Department of Agriculture, there's a different option to what you want to do. Now I can take that debate further. I can just take that debate to the mining industry. And I think my colleagues are bored with my viewpoint about the mining industry in the Northern Cape. But I want to repeat that till the cows come home. You know. The other day, we were informed by the Minister of DMR, Mineral Resources, that the state diamond trader, which the previous president of Becky announced will come to Kimberley, will now stay in Johannesburg. That doesn't make economic sense. But that strategic decision has been taken. Now what happens? The cities, the metropole has got the welfare, the wealth is getting more wealthier, more richer. And the people is going from the Northern Cape, from the Limpopo, from where, to Johannesburg, or to Cape Town, or to Durban. So, this is my point. That influencing power and authority that I hope you've got, please use it in the interest of the whole of South Africa to achieve the decent jobs that you so, propagating your name. Then the last issue is, yeah, I see the website is non-existent. In terms of the commitments of the DG with the time frames, when will the website be up and down?
Thank you, Chairperson. We have completed the work on the website because we're discussing with the minister as to when it can go live. So hopefully it will be soon. I think we sort of hear your plea. We are also aware about the job losses in the first quarter, the decline in employment in agriculture, and the numbers in the Northern Cape, which in terms of the official statistics would indicate that there was a loss of 100
Questions tonight?
person, I'm very glad to hear this young lady's reply, especially if I may call her by first
name.
Sisipani, yeah, sorry. sorry. This disaster management is really a critical thing, because at the moment where it sits, it can only go through the next budget year or the year. You understand, the money is not available immediately. So it is vitally important that we do pay attention to disaster funding that can become available immediately through some form of insurance and an annual contribution by government. And then my other question to you was, was which department is doing some work on this. Thank you, Mr. Chief.
Members, are there any more requests for the record after the answer of this?
Thank you. I think the work is being done through the economic sector and involves possible sectors, environmental affairs and national treasury, for example. But I think that it's not so much always about where we're going to generate new funds, but this is also an opportunity for reallocation rejigging or rethinking the current resources which we have in place. And I think that's been very much the National Treasury position in this discussion. But I think that's all that I can say for now. I'll be happy to proceed offline with the Honourable Member.
Yeah, the function lies with the government. Obviously, you know, this year, agriculture seems to be involved in disaster management together.
I think to add to that, to the IDC, we've made loans available to the affected sectors and the specific departments. We should get more information on
the can I take that invitation further?
Again, that invitation about the flood relationship.
No, I don't.
Are you talking about the offline invitation?
No,
the invitation was offline. And I wanted to make a ruling that in this committee there's no offline, only all online.
Well, I want that to have a direct online engagement about the IDC and the disaster relief, or specifically that Huffington area and so on. Because really people don't realize the impact it's got in the economic activity in that area. So I just want to contextualize it in a broader sense to say that, you know, if the IDC, the influence of the department, can maybe, you know, set up a meeting there, go there and assist, because the reality is from the Department of Agriculture directly, there's no support.
Okay, Gigi not in agreement, so we will allow you to do that online engagement. And then I think it's supposed to be one of our points for oversight in the next step. Also to take EDD and IDC there as part of our oversight activities. But to take them there to see that, or to invite them there to see that, and that can give commitment there. Personally, commitment not online. DG and members, it is now an opportunity to thank you very much for your time and your indulgence. I'm quite surprised to see that some of the members are still around at 25 to 5 in the afternoon. It's been disciplined with you. We we appreciate the gratitude that you are becoming servants of the public. Pastor Fiji, for you and your department, thank you very much for your time, especially good spirit, for the effort that you teach. And really, it's, from our side, in this committee, we've made a promise when we came and we started off as a committee. We said that we will work with departments, that we will also be robust, but not unnecessary. But our main aim is to work, do our work as oversight, as the Constitution has set out for us, and as we have members of Parliament that set us. And I think together we can achieve more instead of fighting with one another. And we had this opportunity in this cluster of engagement with your department, never had the chance of fighting. And I don't see that for like that, because you've got lovely people here. We want to thank also the PRO, Ms. Taitai, for the excellent work and the sterling support that she needs for the committee. Always to keep us at a place on what happened, what's happening. She herself felt very bad about what happened at the conference, but there's no fault of hers. Everything else done creatively from your side. But, you know, as it goes, it can happen. But let me thank you and the rest of your departments, the rest of the QDGs, the DGs, the chief directors, the directors, for all the work and the support that you give to this committee. We will engage further on. Like I said, we're going to embark on a series of oversights after the policy debates and budgets are over. Then we'll definitely call in the department. We know that we can count on your support, like I said. We can just, by the press of a button, this backpack will then respond. We are grateful for that. Honorable members, also for you, go and have a good night. Remember, DMR has got the budget function at the Gali's restaurant. You are all invited to attend tonight. I think it starts what time, right? After 6. It's at after 6. I know that Pierre has got the blanket rule or ban of not attending anything after 5 o'clock. And if it's outside of Parliament, can't attend, go home and go and have a supper or dinner, go to bed, sleep, read. Please do your research on the item that you want to do. The ANC component of members, could you just stay behind for 5 minutes, please? Honourable Leach, are you in our ANC?
Mr. Chairman, just before we close, I'm sorry to hold the official.
Order members.
But
sorry, Honourable Leach.
Honourable
Chair,
you never objected to me when I went to fetch coffee.
We're not closing. I said, thank you, Chair. Honourable Chair,
what would
you call
it?
Honourable Chair.
Mr. Chairman, I understand that I've been redeployed to another committee, and that this is probably the last time I will meet with you, and it's quite a sad occasion for me, because over the last 2 years, including with the officials, I've kind of built up some rather pleasant relationships. So, thank you to all of you for that, because it's been a good team. And whilst initially I was sad that I wasn't in the finance committee and fought hard to get there, I'm now resisting going there. So thank you to all of you, particularly the officials, but also to my colleagues on the committee and to people like Grace and the others who have made my life personally their presence over this period. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Leach. Also, it will be said about to see you go, but we will still honour the commitment of going out to your constituency and the oversight as we promised you. We'll still do that, and when you go there, we hope that you will join us on that occasion to be there. And I think the Farewell Party Economic Development Budget vote is on the 14th or the 9th, the 9th. In the NCOP, and they will then have a favorable party for you for this morning. let the ANC component to stay behind. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you,
but it should be so warm.